Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisha Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Rabbi Mike Boyer joins us today. Rabbi Mike, Shana Tova.
Shana Tova, Yishai. It's great to see you.
It's great to be with you here at the Pardes Institute in Jerusalem and on the Land of Israel Network on the Yishai Fleisha Show. And it's great to be with you here a few days before Rosh Hashanah.
Yom Kippur.
Before Yom Kippur.
You're a little discombobulated.
I'm a little discombobulated. That's because I am in the midst of moving. My house is full of boxes, and I'm not in my really in my old place in my soul, and I'm not in my new place, and therefore I am like God, who became, so to speak, discombobulated when the Jewish people went into exile.
Yeah, and it's very seasonal, you realize, because we're kind of moving from the old year to the new year. We haven't taken up our new residence, which is going to happen, please God, in the coming week when we get to Sukkot, when we all move into our new spiritual home for the coming year.
Amen, amen, amen. And I heard you had a great Rosh Hashanah this year.
It was very strong.
It was strong.
I love the three-day holiday.
Right. Is regular Israeli folks, native Israelis, native-born Israelis, they complain about three-day holiday. We... Anglos coming from the Western countries love it, right? It's like fun. You get to have deep time with your kids and family.
It's just such a wealth of time.
Time.
I'll tell you that I have never felt more wealthy in time than I daven before sunrise on Rosh Hashanah. It's my custom. And get up, go to the mikveh, get to shul. I'm like one of those guys that has to be in shul first. And then by the time I got to the Shmona Esrei, to the silent prayer, I just felt this incredible sense of like, potential, just like my wings spread. It was just unending time, like reeling out before me.
Okay,
really
folks.
Amazing.
So this is some good advice for Yom Kippur this year. Get there early.
Oh yeah.
Hit the mikveh before Yom Kippur.
One of the best things about Yom Kippur actually is that since you're not eating, there's actually nothing else to do.
Right. It's not a day. The limitations from wearing leather shoes, but also from eating and drinking and washing thyself, and also marital relations. It's not really there as a kind of punishment. Some people think of it as like as a day of atonement and punishment in that sense. It's actually a day free of distraction.
Well, you know, and that actually is rooted in the word that the Torah says, "V'anita met nafshotechem," right? You shall. Now, the question is, how do you translate inui? People often will translate it as you'll be sort of caused to suffer.
Affliction,
that's a big one, right? But the reality is what inui is to strip something down to its essence. Right, that's why matzah, right, the unleavened bread, is called lechem oni.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's not just because it's the bread of poverty in the sense that poor people eat it, but it's the bread which is nothing other than its essence of
water, and
flour.
There's a word. There's a word in English when things are brought down to their base thing, when it's kind of
there's a few of them
stripped down to its essential
essence.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what the day is. You strip it down to the essence.
I have an excellent meditation, but it works really only on Pesach for some reason I found, which is I think about the ego, and I like to imagine myself and my ego as a fluffy bread. And then as
a
I
bagel,
breathe
perhaps.
Out, no, like a fluffy, airy bread.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as I breathe out, I breathe in, it's fluffy, and I breathe out, it reduces itself to matzah, and my ego reduces itself to matzah. To what I need to survive, to the essential, and I find that's a great meditation to come back. Ego, it's a big issue. We should have a talk one day about the issues of ego in general.
That'd be a good one for the beginning of Genesis.
Yes, yes, and that's coming soon. Bereshit, we'll be talking about that. We're you and I are already excited about
I'm
talking
really
about Bereshit, and you also gave me off air. You gave me a good piece of advice that since this Sabbath is Yom Kippur, and just parenthetically. Yom Kippur Sabbath doesn't move for anybody. Sabbath doesn't break for anybody except for Yom Kippur.
Which is the Sabbath of Sabbaths.
Sabbath of Sabbaths.
Shabbat Shabbaton.
Right. And also the other, by the way, is if you had a bad dream.
Right.
And you're allowed to
fast
on Shabbat. But generally Shabbat.
And by the way, you also have to fast afterwards for the fact that you fasted on Shabbat.
That's right.
The doubling down.
Bang. Okay. what were we saying? That you said that there's time now. We have about 2 weeks from now to get ready for the Torah portion. We have two Sabbaths in a row, which we're not going to read the regular Torah portion. So it's really great time to get ready for the Big Bang, And I do believe there was a Big Bang, not in the pseudoscience kind of way, but in the Big Bang that the bet of Bereshit and the first word of Bereshit. when it came into the world, that the knowledge that is just in that word, by the way, just in that word itself, there are books, famous books, that are written just about that word.
Sure.
Which book is it? Okay, that's the trivia quiz for everybody out there. There's a book written, one of the mystical books is just about the word of Bereshit. I think it's Tikkuni HaZohar. But in any case, I think it's Tikkuni HaZohar. So check that for me, loyal listeners. That's number one. Number two, am I right?
I think you're right.
I'm right, right? And yeah. In any case, a tremendous Big Bang. You have an opportunity to get ready for it. Speaking of Big Bang, Rabbi Mike, another Big Bang in our lives is the Shofar Blast.
Yes.
The Shofar Blast is like a Big Bang.
My ears are still echoing.
Right. And you had a good Rosh Hashanah this year.
I had a great Rosh Hashanah.
Right. And I had a great Rosh Hashanah as well. My custom is to visit our good friend Shmuel Goldman in the Golan. This year, did not fulfill that custom and stayed in Yerushalayim. I went to two different minyans. I went to myself, not fully Ashkenazi in my thing. Like I don't feel that I am a holy Ashkenaz person. I feel like I'm some kind of mix. So on Rosh Hashanah day, first day I went to Ashkenaz, second day I went to Sephardic. And I listened to the shofar, and the experience was totally different. The Ashkenazi shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, it was like this. It was like we were looking down at the Temple Mount.
Right.
From where I was. I was at the Choshen, looking down at the Temple Mount. I heard the shofar, and it was like this. It was like, we are all in line to go into the gas chambers.
Ooh.
Yeah, we are in line to go into the gas chambers right now. We're stripped of our clothing. We know we're about to lose our life. So God, please have mercy in our souls. And my thinking is like, oh God, I'm going to die now. Please put my soul, pay it forward. Send it on to the next body, and may it have better luck than this one.
I mean, in Mavis Reim.
Right. And then I was looking down at the Temple Mount. I'm like, oh God, we are all like Isaac before you.
Oh wow.
And we are just Isaac, and we're about to, but we know that. That
you're
we
not
are
going to save us,
right? We know that it's going all the way this time, and again, same type of thought.
That doesn't sound so happy,
right? It's not happy, but there's a truth in that. Yesterday from when I'm recording the show today, yesterday my wife's grandfather, Grandpa Mike Yitzchak Yehuda, passed away, 94.
Wow, Baruch Hashem.
With a tattoo of his Auschwitz number on his arm. Okay, and when he told us the tales, and also Grandma Kate, when they told us the tales, you're like this isn't like something from 1492. This is like this happened to us, to our people, my wife's grandfather, all of our Ashkenazi grandparents. So that's the shofar you hear. And when I was recently in Auschwitz with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, he took me into one of these gas chambers / crematorium.
Right.
Right, it's like this double.
Yeah,
it's like they back kill you, then they right. kill you again.
Right.
It it was not anticlimactic. It was indeed climactic. That's I couldn't help myself. That's what I heard at the and also the way it's done in the Ashkenazi minyan. It's slow, and the rabbi, you know, calls out which blast is supposed to be sounded, and it's done according to the. It's like something very didactic.
Are they
and,
timing it there?
You know, they have different ways to do it. But yes.
Yes.
Next day, I'm at the Sephardic Minyan, right?
Uh-huh.
And a kind of chubby guy who's not the rabbi and not the regular guy gets up there with the shofar. The shofar is a different-looking shofar also. It looks a little bit lighter. It doesn't have that kind of curl like of the ram's horn.
Like just, you're bent over right? in suffering prayer.
No, it's got just, you know, just kind of a, just it just kind of bends upwards one time and... And this kind of chubby, nice guy in the shul got up there, grabbed the shofar, and goes, do, 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 do. And here's what I got in my head.
Sounds like Star Wars.
Well, it was like, dude, it was not deep and melancholy. It was not, oh my God, we're going to the gas chamber. It's over. So hey, God have mercy on our soul. It was more like, hey, God, we know you're having a party. I'm standing outside of the door of the party, and I'm ringing the bell. Let me into the party. I want to come into the party. And, by the way, being me, your beloved son, you know, I need some parnasa. I need some welfare. Can you
everybody
hook me up?
Everybody got to make a living.
I need to, you know, hook me up. Cook me up. Abba, please. Come on, Daddy. Come on, King. I love you. You know what I mean? Come on. But hook up a son. Come on. And I'm saying it in a merry fashion, but the fact is that that is – that is a feeling that I felt there. And I feel that every year with them. They just, at the Sephardi davening. Now, I happen to, here I knew that my soul was 60-40. It was more towards the Ashkenazi.
Yeah, it sounded like a stronger image to me.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it's nature and nurture. I don't know. But maybe because my family did go through the Holocaust, yeah, right? And there's the Sephardic family generally did not.
Generally. There were some communities.
And I don't want in any way, this is not who suffered more and any of that kind of stuff. And I'm in no way saying that the Sephardic one was in any way a lesser or less deep. It was just a different relationship. It was just a different relationship to God. In fact, I was happy that I had that side, and I'm sure that I'm going to get more parnassa this year because of that.
B'srat Hashem, you and me both. But no, there's something actually very deep. I know you're serious, aside from the fact that you're smiling. You know, the episode I did on the Jewish story about
this
Ashkenaz,
is your other show here on the Land of Israel.
They have my history, so I personally
which I'm enjoying
call
very
it
much, by the way.
Which I personally call it the on the Crusades that when the smile went out of Ashkenaz,
right,
that if you look at the Midrashim, you'll see the smile that used to be in Ashkenaz, and in round about the 11th century, that was a long time ago, by the way, the smile went out. But one of the amazing things is that it's the sort of youthfulness of Zionism, in many ways, was driven by the desire of the youth of Ashkenaz to say, I can't live this way anymore. You know, we've been saying penitential prayers, the slichot, right, begging for forgiveness early in the morning or late at night, depending on what you do, now for a couple of weeks. And every once in a while, the thought crosses my mind as I'm reading these prayers, which are really about, like, either God, like, trample our enemies and let their blood soak your garments, or God, I'm a sort of worm who has sinned before you. I often have this thought, like, this is not so healthy.
I am a bad slichos person. It is not something that comes easy to me. I find it repetitive. I find it hard to read.
The language is extremely obtuse.
It's an anachronistic language. It's
every year I tell myself next year I'm going to daven with the Sephardim, and because it's completely different.
Yeah,
it's completely different
Sephardic
energy.
It's different. It's totally different. Here, by the way, here just so people know, in Israel there's a great intermingling between Ashkenazic and Sephardic in
Thank
general.
God.
But when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur,
yeah, it's a big split.
There's a split.
Yep.
And it's like synagogues that pray together throughout the rest of the year, like, split off.
Yep.
Now I find it to be actually, I think this is very beautiful, but I certainly want my children to have the knowledge of the Sephardic prayers. When I mean knowledge, I don't mean just awareness. I mean it's like a comfort with it, and comfort there with that different way of connecting.
There's a piece that I'll speak about on my show going forward, is that also all of the history of the Sephardic culture didn't pass through the crucible of the Enlightenment. And what you're getting in Ashkenazi culture is almost a demand based on the need for clarity of identity that the gas chambers be the natural end path of the martyrdom, which was Ashkenazic culture, right?
It's interesting. I thought you were going to go to a different place with that, and I'll just say it the way I understood it, which is, since the Ashkenaz world had a lot of tragedy, it started needing enlightenment, which was also to rationalize and understand what this world is supposed to be about. You can have a more I don't want to misuse a word here, a more simple in a positive sense faith. Yeah. When it's not as challenged by things like the Holocaust.
Yeah, listen, it's not so clear to me.
Isn't enlightenment in some way, it's an answer to the Middle Ages. It's an answer to a dark thing.
It's a rejection of.
Right.
And it's also a rejection of all the traditionalist notions that God actually, you know, here we're coming through Rosh Hashanah, and I would love to speak more about this idea that God is making decisions that we're going to play out for the rest of the year.
Yes.
Right? But it's a rejection of that. My point was, and it's not so clear, by the way, that Sephardim didn't suffer plenty. The Holocaust obviously takes the cake, please God, for Jewish suffering. But my point was more that the split that happened within Ashkenazi culture between the religious and the secular, mm-hmm. where it was forged in the fires of the Enlightenment. It's in a very important part of Ashkenazi religious culture, in inordinately large part, our suffering. And I just don't think that that's so healthy.
You're totally right, and just to bring it down to like what it looks like is that in the Ashkenazi world in general, when a person becomes unobservant, so generally speaking, except with the exception of the ability of Chabad to bring people back and such to Shuva movements, in general, You split off the whole culture.
It's a clean break.
It's a clean break. In the Sephardic world, I'll never forget this. I was with my friend Jeremy Sultan in Mevaseret. We went to a Kurdish. There's a lot of Kurdish Jews there, Kurdim. We went to one of their minyanim, one of their prayers, and there was a guy there wearing a white T-shirt, jeans. He had a crew cut, whatever that is, and just the sides were shaved. He had a white kippah that was clearly not his weekday kippah, okay? It was something he put on for the synagogue. When they lift, and he looked nothing observant at all. When they lifted up the Torah, as we do, he held his hands up, and he said, and I saw his face when he said, "V'zot haTorah, asher sam Moshe v'nei bnei Yisrael." This is the Torah that Moshe put in front of the Jewish people. It was the truest, simplest, and most emit. This man believed with every morsel of his being that God, that Moses put this Torah of God before the Jewish people. I saw that. And in the Ashkenazi world, you don't have that as much. Nope. You don't have that as often. Okay, so we're getting ready for Yom Kippur now. Before we go on, just very quickly, I do want to say, I remembered, you know, of the last few shows, I like forgot my fourth sponsor because I've been running around, and I forgot that my fourth sponsor is Janglo.net.
Oh.
Janglo.net, the source of information about
everything
life in Israel.
Everything you need to know.
Right, everything you need to know to make it here in this land. In this good land,
our
beloved Jewish state, our beloved state of Israel, with all its faults, it's a wondrous and amazing thing. By the way, the Prime Minister gave an awesome speech at the UN before Rosh Hashanah.
I heard, yeah.
I loved every word, and I didn't even understand at first. I was like, "Wow, that is the best speech I ever heard." I was like, "Dang, why was this speech so good?" And then I analyzed and I thought about it, and then I'm like, he didn't mention Palestine, two-state, Mahmoud Abbas, my hand is extended in peace to you, blah, 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 and any of that junk. You heard it. And
they didn't see the look on your face when you said it.
Which mires a decent speech when you hear this stuff, which is just, how about we just, you know, bring in the devil to take away our land, you know? And I was just, I realized that because of that, there was a ring. Let freedom ring. There was a ring, a crystal glass ring of his speech because it just wasn't mired with extra junk. By the way, today we're sitting here. Yesterday, three Jews were murdered in Har Adar next to Mevaseret by a.
But three people were murdered.
Three people. That's right. One was an Israeli Arab. That's right. One was an Israeli Arab, and two Jews were murdered by a terrorist who had no prior terrorism record. But what? His wife had left him a few weeks beforehand. He was stuck with four kids. He was a violent person in a family life. And what could be better to support those four, you know, children that he was growing than to get Palestinian Authority money by being called, and I should say Palestinian Authority money, i.e. American money. And so he committed this heinous crime just to be called a shaheed and to get that money. That's number one. Today, two Israeli soldiers, reserve soldiers, were killed.
Yeah, a training accident.
In a training accident when a armored vehicle flipped over. So there's definitely some judgment in the air, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, listen, everybody should be healthy and well. But, you know, there is an aspect of righteousness in seeing judgment that clearly. You know, I mean, not that I would wish for it, nor do I, you know, like, would I be so arrogant as to pass judgment on other people's lives. But there is a blessing in seeing the judgments in one's life clearly. Because mm-hmm. one of the great challenges I always find is coming through this period of time is, well, now I have to live my life as if I'm responsible for everything. I mean, right now I'm so focused on this state of mind from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur that God, it's really all about you. You're fixing my livelihood for the coming year. You're going to assume we're going to pray for the rains, and it's all about you. But then, like, once we come out of the sukkah, it's kind of like, okay, now I actually have to live my life as if it's all about me. And that's a very hard tension to hold. You don't often get that clarity of God reminding you, no, this is really me.
Isn't what you're saying really the challenge of being a Jew and a human being in general, which is like, God, you've created every atom and every molecule in this world. Your will be done in the end, right? So, like, where is my... I mean, that's the ultimate
Where's
question.
The Where's space my
autonomy?
For me?
And how much autonomy do you want me to take? because I know you want me to take autonomy because that's the way you created the world, and you don't want me to be some kind of lump on a log, you know, waiting for you, you know, the famous joke, you know, with the
I sent you two helicopters
right, and all that business. So
right.
it's like that isn't that one of the greatest tensions, especially for God fearing, God loving people who want to use their life as a conduit for God's will.
It's definitely, I think,
isn't it the tension itself, though, that is
yeah,
the...
Yeah, it defines the human condition. But fortunately, we have a model and other arenas in which we're perhaps more familiar. Because remember, the problem with that tension is it's a construct, meaning I believe that, but I don't necessarily experience it. That's what I meant when I said that there is something powerful and kind about feeling God's end of the judgment. Right, it's very hard to walk in the world knowing intellectually or believing that God's in charge. But
he made himself invisible.
Yeah, but one's daily experience is like it's actually all about me. So the model I find that is quite helpful in accessing that is any real relationship you have. Because, you know, you think about your relationship with your wife or any other loved one or a close friend. They, of course, want you to be you. That's why they entered into the relationship with it. But, of course, any relationship means that they also want things of you. They want you to reflect their will at times as well. But they want you to reflect their will because you want it. You know what I mean? There are times when your wife asks you to do something and you do it because she wants it. And that's good. Obedience works. But really, the things that our wives and loved ones really want of us, they want us to do because we want it.
Right.
And that's...
I want you kids to clean up the room because I want you to want it.
I want you to want to live in a clean house.
That's right.
I want you to...
That's right.
By the way, do you know that this is the essence of Yom Kippur?
No.
Right? Because what historical event happened on Yom Kippur? I'm talking about biblical historical, not...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what it was?
Was it the smashing of the...
No, that happened on the 17th of Tammuz, right?
Right.
But that sets us up. We're not going to... I won't drag you through the whole calculation. Moshe goes back up. There's 40 days. Well, first, there's like 3 days of cleanup in the camp there where a bunch of people getting killed and the calf gets burned and all that, right? He goes back up for 40 days.
Right.
Comes back down on what day? Rosh Chodesh Elul.
Right.
The first day of the month of Elul.
Right.
Right? And says,
and then he goes,
now I'm going back.
Back
now
up,
that I repaired the situation.
To bring the second tablets.
I'm going back up to bring the second tablets. He comes back down 40 days later, which is Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur.
So you know what the essence of Yom Kippur is? Right? We want for ourselves what God wanted for us all along.
Okay. So that's interesting what you're saying. We wanted for ourselves what God wanted all along. And yet, the whole Yom Kippur service in biblical times was like the dance of a ballerina inside of an intricate stage. One ballerina moving back and forth and doing all these clock-like.
There's a lot of precision involved.
I think of it like
I look forward to being able to watch it.
Yeah, it's like watching a clock. That's what it seems like.
For sure.
Me.
This one, yeah. That one. If you ever learn the Gemara in Yoma, it's pretty intense.
Dun, 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 dun,
I see that.
Dun, 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 dun,
now spin, put that down, pick that up, change this clothes, wash your hands, get back in.
That's what the music I thought of when I was learning.
I have to work to get that out of my head before davening on Shabbos. Thank you very much.
It's like, here's what I think, Rabbi Mike.
Yeah.
I'm sitting across from you right now, and you're thinking whatever thought you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, your eyes are focusing many, many times beyond your, at every second.
Sure.
And there are synapses and neurons going off in your brain that you're not really in control of. Your heart is beating.
For sure, yeah.
And your lungs are doing the thing, the whole blood oxygen
aside
exchange.
From the autonomous nervous system, there are all kinds of thoughts that drift in and out.
Right.
And problems that are bothering me and things I'm trying to write and, you know.
But that's already semi-conscious. I'm talking about the many things that are happening that are not conscious.
Autonomous
right?
nervous system.
Right. The whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing is not in our control. So when I think of like that is the when I think of Yom Kippur, you're saying that it's our will. We want to do what God wants, and yet the fulfillment of that is what, like this high priest doing these hard-to-understand actions all by himself, and somehow he's representative of all of us? What's that about?
You know, for sure he's representative of all of us. And, you know, there are many layers. When I say that's what Yom Kippur is about, I mean, that's one... You know, it's kind of like the sages say that the mitzvah tzitzit is, you know, keneged kulam, it's equivalent of all the other mitzvot, and you know, the mitzvah of learning Torah is the equivalent of all the other mitzvot.
And they, right. Like, in how the land
could,
of Israel.
In the land of Israel, like, I mean, and so like, how could they all be? And the answer is, come on, just go with me. You know, we're rabbis. You know, so, but part of that is there is an essence of Yom Kippur, which is about bringing myself to the place of wanting what God wanted for me all along. Another piece, and I think that particularly the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, the service in the temple, represents is a restoration of relationship, which by definition is going to be defiled. Right? That phrase that repeats itself in the liturgy, right? The shochem b'tocham b'tumatam, right? That God's presence dwells amongst them in their impurity.
Right.
Right? That is the great mystery of Yom Kippur. Why would God create a situation in which we could be pure or impure and then promise us, and I'm with you no matter what, right, and then tell us to do this whole ritual to purify ourselves? Because that's really what's happening in the temple. There's this tremendous restoration.
But doesn't that make sense? Listen, think about your car. You drive your car, and it needs, and you really drive it hard, and it needs tuning. It needs to get back to as much of a perfected state as it can be, and you take it again.
And a lot of it, I think, is also God giving us a sense of agency. I mean, the precision and the focus that you're speaking about, and it's true that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is only one person, but he's one person. I mean, you know, all the metaphors are rife. He's one person that exists on top of a tremendous pyramid, right? The very construction of the Beit HaMikdash, particularly in biblical and Second Temple times, was a mass public works project. Even today, please God, let it be soon, let it be now. Our technology is greater, but it's going to be a very big project.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that's just to create the physical infrastructure, yeah, the educational infrastructure in order to produce this person, then the structure of purity of all the layers that you have to go through in order to achieve that moment. So it's true he's one person, but he's one person who stands at the head of a nation. And he goes alone into that one place that only he goes one day a year, right? Because in the end of the day, all relationship has to be direct and personal. Though we speak of the national relationship to God, though we speak of our collective.
But it sounds impersonal.
No, it's a he is the point of contact.
Right.
And one of the reasons that we all read his avoda, his service that he does on Yom Kippur, right, is we're supposed to bring ourselves to that point of believing. Okay, even though in the temple service I'm not even a Kohen, so I'm out of the box, right, altogether, I still have an obligation on this day to find that place where I come into contact with the Holy of Holies, with the deepest of the divine. And I have to believe that I can.
Yeah, I mean, you have to know that you can. You have to really...
And that takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work. That's why we're in shul for, you know, who knows how many hours. That's why we remove all distractions.
I knew a guy stood the whole Yom Kippur.
Yeah?
Stood the whole Yom Kippur at YU, I remember. In his socks, just did not sit down the whole,
yep,
time. Then that is I saw that. That is a formula for getting rid of the punishment of karet, of the ritual cutting off.
Right.
When you're cut off from God, like one of the formula, kind of like mystical formulas, is stand all day on Yom Kippur.
Yep. Which is, by the way, not so easy.
No. It is no. It's very, very hard. Very, very hard. One more thing I do want to ask you about today is the issue of the what's it called again? The scapegoat. The Azazel, which is not so far away from you where you live.
Uh huh.
Isn't that why you have the Azazel Synagogue over there? Wouldn't that be a great name for a shul?
I think not. Considering modern Hebrew.
Where are you going? I said, I'm Yolech Lazazel. Yeah, right. Or Lech Lazazel. Right. That'd be, that's just a Hebrew joke. In any case, the Azazel is what? The feeding ground of
the devil.
Of the devil. Right? Of the dark energy.
Yeah.
What's the other word for devil? Satan, right? Satan. That's the right? So it's like,
it's got to be a question.
Right? So it's like go feast on this for a while, Mr. Satan guy.
Yeah, let me throw you a bone.
I'll throw you a bone.
Throw a bone to the dark forces.
Right. One time I was in a Chabad event of some kind, and somehow it happened that I got drunk. And no, the other people didn't. Oh, somehow I was.
It was a failed Chabad event then.
No, no, everybody else was drinking, but somehow I got drunk.
I got you.
I may have had that more happens. Than other people. Whatever it was, I was probably on some kind of antibiotics or something. No, anyway.
Of course, no, you hadn't eaten for 3 days.
Yeah, something like that.
Being Russian, you have to, of course, protest that it wasn't your fault.
No, but in any case, so I got a little drunk, and I was a little kind of, you know, it was a little funny. And then the Chabadnikim said, "That's okay. You were the Seer Lazazel. There is sometimes somebody who gets drunk.
He's got to go over the edge.
Right. This one guy's got to do it, and this time it was you. But, like, we have a custom that such a thing can happen. That's the...
But notice that language, by the way. Somebody's got to go over the edge.
Right.
And that's, of course, for people who aren't familiar, what you actually do. There's this scapegoat, right? And you bring these two identical goats. And one of them is Lashem. One of them is for God and is going to be the centerpiece of the most intense, intimate ritual done with God, and the other one's going over the edge, and they have to be identical.
And over the edge in the desert.
Into this, not only have to be identical, you have to actually draw lots in order that which one is which is completely random.
Right, and you walk this thing to the desert, and there's little stops along the way.
Right,
I don't remember how many, maybe 24, I feel like, but there's an amount of stops along the way. At every way station, even though you're fasting, this person that takes the scapegoat, they're offering food and water. He kind of says no
because it's permissible to him,
right? Because he's walking the desert, because he could die out there, because he's you know, and he generally says no, and then he gets to a spot in the desert, which we have, by the way, found, which we have found, Jabal Muntar.
That was
not,
called
that. Not so far away from you. How we found it? Steep edge and
well, the Mishnah gives a pretty clear description of how far away it is. And, it's just a matter. Of...
And we found the bones. We have
bones?
Found bones. Yeah, we found
goat
the bones.
Bones.
Yeah, goat bones just hanging out there in the bottom. You push the goat over the edge. Goat's tumbling down. By the time it hits the middle,
it's goat burger.
It's
sorry.
It's goat blender. It's been you know, and
so what was
what
the
is
question?
That about? You know,
what Azazel?
The whole Yom Kippur thing. That's why did I say that thing? I know that I threw in something that didn't kind of. I was not clear about why I was saying that, because to me about your body and about our bodies, there's something about Yom Kippur which is to me like a little bit of like an X-ray, like you're looking into a place. God is letting you into machinations, spiritual machinations, which are usually not, we're not privy to.
Yes.
And there's like actions going on. And you, as you said, you can read along and see what's going on and of this clearing of some kind of spiritual baggage and chucking it and cleaning it and starting anew. And he's kind of letting you in.
It's a lifting of the veil.
It's a lifting of the veil for a little bit. And when you lift the veil, you're like, dang, I don't even know what's going on
here.
Yeah. Right.
Have you ever looked at the sort of back end of a website?
Right, back end of a website. Opened up on a piece of. You remember when we were kids? You know, you used to open up the computer or the VCR.
Right,
or whatever,
you look at the back and you're like, how does that?
You're like,
work?
You're like, what are they? You know, or you played with your first motherboard. You know?
Right,
you're like, what is this? What is this? And that's what it is to me. Like you open up and it's all in the Bible. It's all there. And you know it's true. But you're like, I don't really
get this.
Yeah, and I won't get this kind of.
Right. Although, at the risk of nevertheless venturing a thought on it, I think that the particular veil that's being lifted in the scapegoat is that place within us that can't imagine good without evil, that can't imagine purity without impurity, right? And I do not believe that what we're doing is affirming the existence of evil, like the devil's out there and we got to give him his due.
Right.
Right? I think what we're doing is attempting to actually get to that place where we can believe in the existence of good without evil, where we can actually touch purity without having to define it by what it's not. And
really?
So,
I thought there is like evil. Go. I would have thought exactly
go,
the opposite.
Go what? Appease it?
Recognize that it's a force in this life, and right now we have to somehow. And there's other examples of this. For example,
wait, at the end of Yom Kippur, what did you shout out in shul together with everybody else?
The Shana Baba Yerushalayim.
That's the very, very end. Yeah. But what comes right before that? Shem Hu Elokim.
Right. Shem Hu Elokim. God is
God.
Right.
But what does that mean when you speak about the kavanah, the intention,
that,
the meaning?
The whole world is.
There's only God.
Right.
There's only God.
Right.
So wait a minute. If there's only God, then where are you sending that scapegoat?
Because he created a world. to play in, as you said, agency, a sense of like.
And that agency exists primarily within the human mind. And that's what I'm saying. I believe that the particular veil which is being lifted there is that limitation of humanity. If you're going to put it in terms of Bereshit of Genesis, we're stuck in the second story. We can't touch the first. You know, in the first chapter of Genesis, there's good, but there's no evil.
Sure.
Evil only appears.
There's the real Garden of Eden. Right. No snake.
Well, but not even the real Garden of Eden. It's something which is beyond, in the same way that that first light which God creates, right? The Midrash teaches us God hides it away for the righteous. Why? Because that first light actually allows us to see without shadow. You know, in this room right now, it's not the light that allows you to see. It's the shadow. If I took a giant flashbulb and right now and flooded this room with light, would we be able to see better? No, we'd be blinded by the light. Because it's the shadow that allows us to see. That's the human condition. And so therefore, what we're doing with the Seer Azazel is we're saying, that's not really true. Right?
That is
interesting. That's our scapegoat. Because if I knew that that wasn't true, I wouldn't fail myself and I wouldn't fail God. That's why it's called a scapegoat. We're putting all our sins on it. Why? Because like the rabbis say, a person would never sin if a Ruach Shtut had not entered into them. Some foolish spirit. What's that foolish spirit? Is to believe that there's actually something other than God. Not ideologically. Deeper, like you said, we're pulling back the veil. I can ideologically believe there's only God, but I still do things wrong. How does that work? The answer is because deep, all the way in that, almost in that autonomous nervous system, the deep psychology, I do believe that there are forces other than God. The primary one being myself, by the way.
Right, right. Okay, I can definitely understand what you're saying. And I'll spin it just a tad differently for how I've understood it till now, which is that there is nothing other than God, but it's his world. And you have to accept that there is a Holocaust, there is Hitler, it's and he created it to overcome it. And even on Yom Kippur, there's a place of like nodding to the fact that this is his world and he created this kind of world. And the way to reach him is to play his game in this world.
I just got to say that in my mind, Hitler and the Holocaust had nothing to do with God. When people say to me, where was God in the Holocaust? The only response I have is when you can tell me where man was in the Holocaust, then I'm willing to answer your question. That it is humanity that brings evil into the world. Evil does not come from God.
Okay, we're treading on a
you just hit a real raw note for me.
No, yeah, no, but the obvious question is, well, but he's the creator of all things.
You have no question.
He put this impulse into this world. Like to me, it's more like I'll explain to you where I'm coming from. I wanted to go to like I was supposed to go to like some kind of you know get a doctorate somewhere you know instead of go to law school. But always in my mind, I was always trying to be more practical than mm-hmm. than my inclinations were.
Mm-hmm.
And I meet people all the time who say to me, I'm like, why aren't you married? Because I don't want to play the game. I'm like, but the game is how you get married. Play the game, boy, because you're...
If you want to be married, that's
right.
How you get there.
Or
right?
People say to me, politics is dirty. But I'm like, but this is how you build a Jewish state, you know? Or Yom Kippur is supposed to be about me and God. And what is this weird? And I'm like, no, so you see, you got to play the game. You got to, God says to you, you want to reach me? You got to somehow shoo away the dark forces and focus on me, but that's part of it. Just right. Like Abraham had to shoo away the vultures in the middle of a very spiritual moment. That's part of this thing in this world. And that's you're not the boss, you're not the creator, and this is the way he says he's going to run this world.
I agree with you, and I will double down on this idea that Yom Kippur is the day in which we actually don't have to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know that Yom Kippur, people often look at it as the day in which we're all taking responsibility for everything we've done. The reality is I think that that's what Rosh Hashanah and the 10 days that lie between, the 10 days of tshuva. Yom Kippur, in my mind, is the day when we look at God and we say, you know what? It's actually all your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually all your fault.
It's you all
know
you.
What, you know what my proof is? Aside from the fact that Rav Tzadok Lublin said this before me, is I'm dressed all in white. I'm not eating. There's an old custom of not sleeping. I'm not being physically intimate. I'm not, you know, wearing my fancy shoes. Nothing. And I'm looking at God. I'm in shul all day. And I look at God and say, listen, God, when I don't have to eat and I don't have to sleep and I don't have any bodily desires, look what I do. I stand here and I pray all day.
Right.
Who made me this way?
Mm-hmm.
You made me this way.
You're right.
So today I'm going to look you in the face, God, and say, by the way, it's all your fault.
And
that's okay.
You remind me of a very beautiful story that I must tell here. And the story is brought down in the famous book about Hasidic tales about the holidays in the Torah, Red Book. In any case, the story goes like this. One time a chassid came to the famous advocate for Israel, Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev, and he says to him, I want to learn about how you do kaparot, you know, when we swing the chickens over our head or the money over our head. I want to see how you do it. So he says to him, what do you want to see? What if I have a red chicken or a black chicken? What do you? There's nothing to see. It's irregular. He goes, I still want to see. So Rabbi Levi says to him, you really want to see? You want to see how you do kaparot? He's like, yeah. He's like, go to this and this house and this and this village. Okay, so he goes to this and this house and this village. And it turns out that that place is an inn for drinking, like a bar, an ancient bar.
Where they let you sleep.
No, they don't. They, it's more like a.
It's a kretschme.
It's a kretschme. So it's more like a bar, what we call a bar today. Anyway, it's a Jewish place, but everybody inside are Gentiles, and they're just drinking and doing their thing. Finally, at midnight. Oh, so he says, the guy says to the owner, I want to stay here tonight. He says, no, you can't, this, that. He begs him. He says, fine, you could sleep here in the corner. Anyway, he lies down. At about midnight, the owner of the house kicks out all of the drinkers. And the house is full of smoke and stinks. But he opens up the windows and all the smoke goes out, right? And the owner of the house says to his wife, he says, wife, please bring me this and this book. And he opens up and she brings him the book. And he opens up this book and he says, God, tonight is Erev Yom Kippur. And I want to tell you my sins. And he starts reading. On this and this date, I missed Siman Kriyat Shema. On this and this date, I said Lashon Hara. On this and this date, I acted not right with my children. On this and this date. And he goes on and on in his dishonesties and his small things and all the infractions, list by list, day by day, time by time, list the whole thing. And he closes the book and he cries and he says, God, I'm not worthy. How could I stand before you? How could I stand before you with when I'm so dirty and so sullied? When he finishes crying, he says to his wife, he says, wife, please bring me this other book. And he opens up the book and he reads it and he says, God, on this date, I was walking and suddenly I was jumped by bandits and they beat me and took my money. On this date, my daughter passed away. On this date, and he goes on and on a list of things that are horrible happened. He says, God, I pray to you to have a good year. Oh, he said in the first book, he says, God, I pray to you that I will be better this year, and I failed you. When he finishes reading this book, he says, I pray to you to have a good year, but you didn't come through. I had all these horrible things. He goes, however, tonight is the eve of Yom Kippur, and we must make amends. So how about I forgive you, and you forgive me, and we break even. He takes these two books, spins it over his head in kaparot, and he chucks it out the door. That's the Hasidic story.
That's a good story.
Of the proper kaparot. And I think that's what you're talking about just now also, which is for like, sure. You know, here I am, God. I would be great in front of you if you didn't put such a hard world in front of us.
And it is really all about you.
All right. Yom Kippur is, we touched on the edge of the spoon of the great things that Yom Kippur is capable of, the great secrets. I still understand that it's like an x-ray into a world that's almost beyond us to understand. And we have a great chance at expiation to start our life anew, right?
Yeah, well, it's an incredible thing to make the space, and I don't just mean in time, but I mean in an inner space of a real belief that you can actually start anew, right? It's one of the greatest gifts. That's why it is the day of mercy, right? The great day of Rachamim. To understand, in Rachamim in Hebrew, its root word is Rechem, which means womb. Right, and the womb is the ultimate making space for another one to emerge, and that's what God does for us on this day.
Amen.
He says, "If you show up, I will make space for you to have a new year."
Let us commit ourselves right now to emerge anew. With the only difference is we can emerge anew, but not like babies. We can have our wisdom intact.
That's right.
And yet, all the dross leave that behind. That part can be buried. Once again, I'm now going to be committed to saying Kaddish for now my Grandpa Yehuda from Yitzchak Yehuda for Grandpa Mike.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah, no, I'm committed right now to three other people. They're all family. So now I have all the way till next Elul. But I want to tell you that whenever I have an extra Kaddish, I also say Kaddish for myself. That was yesterday. Okay, the Kaddish of whoever I was yesterday, I'm no longer that person. I'm starting again anew, but only wiser and better. Folks, this show, the Yishai Fleisher Show on the Land of Israel Network, is brought to you by, as we mentioned before, Janglo.net. Also, this Rosh Hashanah, I was quite privileged to be wearing a brand new tallit with tehillet, with the blue string, the blue dye, the indigo dye. From ancient times has been reborn in our time. It is really the sign of the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel and the return of God's knowledge into our minds at this time. It is, in a sense, the signature of our return to this land. You can be part of this great Tehillet revolution. You could be, as Rabbi Mike called it, a true blue Jew by going to T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T. I'm very proud to be a brand representative for Tehillet. T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com. And my sister said to me, you have like a Nike deal. I'm like, I have a Nike deal.
That's right.
I have a Nike deal, you know, and I'm really excited.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Oh my gosh, that's exactly right. It's really one of the greatest mitzvot there is, and it's part of the whole thing.
The whole shvung.
The whole shvung. Oh, and I got my son, 6-year-old. I learned from my good friend, Reb Meir Eisenman, great tour guide. I learned from him to even put it on my son. My 6-year-old son got Tehillet this year. Fantastic. I also want to thank the good folks at JBrick, JBrick.com, a great Jewish way to play with Jewish Lego and to make it, you know, construct Jewishly. So check out JBrick.com and let me know what you order. If you order something, I want to hear from you. I want to also thank the good folks at Hebron, especially HebronFund.org, holding down the fort, the Alamo of our people. Right?
Let's choose a different metaphor. Yeah, that didn't end well.
Yeah, didn't end well, but it's holding it down. Holding it down, certainly, and it is the founders of our peoplehood and the Jewish community, the brave Jewish community that surrounds it. Is, how about this, the Knights of the Machpelah?
Okay,
do you like that? We're like the Knights of the Machpelah. You don't like Knights, and I know why. That makes a lot of sense. In any case, however you want to view it, the brave Jewish community in Hebron protects it and keeps it open for the rest of us. So please go to HebronFund.org, donate. As an excellent source of expiation for your sins. So what a great opportunity for that. Furthermore, another great institution is the Land of Israel Network. And there are many great shows, including Rabbi Mike's other show, which is called The Jewish Story. You can reach Rabbi Mike at RavMike@thelandofisrael.com and on his Facebook page, Rav Mike. You can reach me just by typing in Yishai Fleisher into Google in a myriad of ways. A myriad of faces, a myriad of channels will open up to you. Choose your favorite one. The only one that I must say that I'm not there anymore is I'm not on MySpace anymore. But and I've never been on.
I don't even know what that is.
That's an old one. It's just a joke. I'm not on AOL. I'm not on MySpace. But I'm also not on what's the ones the kids use these days?
Snapchat.
I'm not on or Googly Face, as I like to think of it. I'm not on Googly Face either. But other than that, you can reach me. But really, trying to reach me and Rabbi Mike is fine. But these 10 days, reach out to G-D. Found at he's not found on the internet. He's found everywhere. Just look up to heaven. You could reach him. Certainly, if you want to fly into the country, it's recommended right now to the land of Israel. If you can't fly into the land of Israel, concentrate on the land of Israel and bring your soul into the Jewish story and into the high priest who will stand soon in Jerusalem and fulfill the Yom Kippur Avodah.
Let it be soon, let it be now.
Rabbi Mike Foyer, thank you so much for joining me.
It is always a pleasure, and you should be written and sealed into the Book of Life in the coming year.
V'chen lemar, God bless you, Rabbi Mike, for parnasa, for health, for hatzlacha, for continued broadcasting, and success in child rearing as well. We are always broadcasting to others, but we have to remember our little kids who sometimes lag behind when we're public people, etc. So it's very important to do that as well. And I bless all of you with good child raising, good child rearing, and children if you don't have them, and all the good things that you need and wish for. God bless you, folks. And folks, one more thing I bless you with, no fear. No fear. Overcome all fear about personal, taking personal responsibility, extreme responsibility, loving your spouse, finding your spouse, raising your children, and fighting the bad guys, and knowing what the truth is and proclaiming it loud and clear. God bless you wherever you are. Stay tuned, and shalom.
Who are we as a nation? What does it mean to be a Jew in the land of Israel, as a Jew in Judea? What is our message to the world? We're finally back in our land, and we get to ask these questions.
Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to make Judea and Samaria an issue for the entire world to know that the Jews have a place in the world.
Israel Inspired with Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.